It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One. Stop. Stop. Throw in the towel. It's cruel. Joe Biden cannot run for president. Two, the blowback to me saying it's selfish not to have children. Three, strength and weakness in Major League Baseball as we begin the month of Pride. It's the Will Kane podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcasts. I'm feeling old lately. It's not just that I walk around in my backyard talking on the phone, conducting quote-unquote business meetings. While I weed, I like to weed as I talk, walk around, pull weeds out of places they should not be. There is no place for weeds. Hate weeds. And I am the old man. I am the dad that sits around and as his leisure time manicures his backyard. Also, I now have a son who is taller than me. It's so weird. I'm not short. I once said I was 6'2". I don't think I'm 6'2". But I'm taller than 6'1". My son is taller than me. And he's begun to say things like, I can see the top of your head. And I'm starting to wonder, are you Boban Marjanovic? Are you going to be 7 feet tall? Should we have put you in basketball? You need to work out. And that's also a sign of my age. I've become very dad. In fact, that's what that son said to my wife. All of a sudden, it's summer, school's out, and he's being very daddish. Hey, you need to go build this in the backyard. You need to go work out. It's true. I can't stand the idea of him sitting around on the couch watching South Park and scrolling through Snapchat. So I'm getting old. You know, I'm not shaking it off like I used to. You've probably noticed my voice has been a little deeper this week. I got sick. I guess I came home with the Spanish flu, Spanish influenza. And it gave me that, you know, sick, deeper voice, which is cool. But it's made me feel a little fragile, along with my shrinking height as compared to my sons and my pastime of weeding. But I'm not as old as Joe Biden. Story number one. Stop, stop. I mean, seriously, throw in the towel. It's over. It's cruel to continue. Joe Biden cannot run for president. This week, at the commencement of the Air Force Academy, Joe Biden, shaking hands with cadets, seemingly wandered simply a step or two to his right. I do not know if there was a step down. I do not know if there was a rail that could have caused a trip. All I know is that Joe Biden fell like a sack of potatoes. I mean a hard, hard tumble. It's hard to watch. You got to go see this video. I'm sure it's all over your social media platform if you haven't yet seen. It's on the homepage of foxnews.com. It's not simply a stumble. It's an event. It is newsworthy. The president of the United States is incapable. This cannot be the vision of our leadership. It's not cruel for me or you to notice the frailty of the president of the United States. It's not cruel for us to point out this is inappropriate. In fact, it's cruel to do the opposite. It's cruel to pretend, to continue to pretend, that Joe Biden can do this job, that Joe Biden should be doing this job. It's cruel to be his wife. It's cruel to be the First Lady of the United States, Jill Biden, and continue to put your husband in this position. I don't care how many interviews he gives to a friendly press. I don't care how many times he says, watch me. We are watching. These are significant moments. They're not only significant moments that illustrate the capability of the President of the United States to the American people, but illustrate the frailty of the United States to the world. This is enough. Interestingly, as is so rarely the case, this was put into perfect context recently by an actor in Hollywood. James Vanderbeek put together a Memorial Day message where he called to task the Democrats, the DNC, the Democratic Party. He called to task the machine that says there will be no debate, figuratively or literally, there will be no debate about the Democrat nominee for president, that it will be Joe Biden. In this video, Vanderbeek talks about the fact that he's 80. Were he to be reelected, he'd be the oldest president, sitting president, in history. And it's obvious to everyone, including this Hollywood actor, that Joe Biden is of limited mental capacity, much less physical capability. And to that, the Democratic Party has said no, no to a debate. Now, that's in an environment where RFK Jr. is currently polling at 20% among Democrats. So Democrats are being told by the Democratic Party that at a minimum, 20% of you do not matter, are not worthy of consideration, are not worthy of debate. Vanderbeek says they are ignoring the will of the people. Now, I think this is interesting in a week where the Republican Party agreed to a debt ceiling suspension for roughly, 2.5-3 years. Seemingly, once again, against the will of the people. The vast majority of the American public, and notably Republican voters, want to see spending cuts, not a freeze in spending at pandemic emergency levels, capped at 1% growth over the next couple of years, but spending cuts. And why is that? Well, we're currently living through the cost of profligate spending, of out of control spending. What do you think caused inflation? We continue to rack up yearly deficits and an accumulation of American debt. It is absolutely unsustainable, a path we've only been able to chart by remaining the world's reserve currency. But it is unsustainable, our appetite for defense spending and Social Security and Medicare, and then discretionary spending, which only amounts to 1/3 of 1/3 of the budget. And that's what we are fighting over. This budget, this spending is unsustainable, and we're living through the effects, the cost of that unsustainability. The fact that we can't get home loans less than 6%, the fact that our dollar's worth less every day, the fact that groceries are too expensive, the fact that our economy is so incredibly fragile is because we have spent like drunken sailors. This is in ignorance, in defiance of the will of the people. And you say to yourself, who do these parties represent? You know, the Democratic Party's answered that for their voters. Seriously, if you find yourself on the left, what is the justification for Dianne Feinstein? I mean, what is she, 90? And look at her. Dianne Feinstein is not working with a full bag of golf clubs. Dianne Feinstein is not the best representative of the will of the people of even Northern California. Look at John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. Why is the Democratic Party so happy to put up people who are not themselves an individual capable of principles and courage and strength, much less a reflection of the will of the voters? What the Democratic Party is willing and happy to put up in too many cases is not even weakness, but simply placeholders, blank chess pieces, cardboard cutouts, Slenderman, nameless, shapeless, faceless individuals willing and capable of doing the will, not of the people, but of the Democratic Party. And that's the reason that they will not entertain a debate, much to the disappointment of James Vanderbeek. They will not even entertain a debate about whether or not the next nominee for Democrat for President of the United States will be Joe Biden, literally incapable of standing, at least on a consistent, reliable, notable basis. The Democratic Party is not serving the will of the people. And Vanderbeek asked that question in his video. Then who are they serving? The interest of big pharma, big business, big politics. And the same can be said for the Republican Party. These parties, like any other institution, are in the business of self-justification. They're in the business of survival, of self-preservation. They're in the business of status quo, as is every entity. You and I are in the business of survival. That's what we do. That's what remains at the highest of our hierarchy of needs. For those of us that can find our way to faith, we are to place faith above everything else in that hierarchy. But the base human instinct and the base human need is survival. It's the same for a collection of human beings. It's the same for a corporation. It's the same for a business. It's the same for a party. It's the same for a nation. These parties, Democrat, Republican, whatever, are in the business of surviving. And it doesn't really matter who that human being, who that placeholder, who that character may be. They could be incapacitated. Or they could be ignored. Vanderbeek is experiencing on the Democratic side of the aisle exactly what Republican voters feel like they are experiencing as well. And it is the reason that the system responded so viscerally to Donald Trump. This is not an argument for the merits of Donald Trump. This is actually just an observation of the reaction to Donald Trump, because he was not of the party. He was not a creation. He was not supported by. He was actually opposed by the Republican Party. Hey, in the same way, the Democratic Party has opposed Bernie Sanders. I mean, think about that for just one moment. You and I often talk about the movement of the Democratic Party and the movement of the electorate on the left, moving more and more towards what we would consider to be radical left. Well, who represents much of the radical left? Well, Bernie Sanders actually represents in that way the vision and the will of the people. But Bernie Sanders doesn't stand a chance of making his way through the apparatus that is the Democratic Party. Donald Trump didn't either. The Republican Party opposed Donald Trump. He just overcame it in a way that was impossible for Bernie Sanders. And then the system turned itself on Donald Trump. I mean, again, whether or not you're a fan, it's not hard to see reality. From the FBI to the mainstream media to the CIA, the entire system pointed its crosshairs at Donald Trump. And why? Because he had no place within the status quo. Now, none of what I just said is to say he was incredibly effective. I'm not saying he was or was not effective. That's not the important point. It's not pom-poms or booze that I offer you today when it comes to Donald Trump. It is simply the observation of reality that he was not of the apparatus and didn't serve the survivability of those two parties. Whatever happens next for either one of them will be the choice of survivability. At least they will attempt to make it the way, make that the case. They've only failed once. That was with Trump. But if reality and the will of the people mean anything, the Democratic Party cannot be allowed to simply put up the placeholder that is Joe Biden with all of his frailty, all of his weakness, and all his incapability, because sooner or later, while you ignore the will of the people, you cannot ignore the reality of the world. And the world will see that. The world will see that. They'll see that weakness. And the world will march. Someone, somewhere has to stand up for strength. The strength of conviction, the strength of his family, the strength of compassion, the strength of truth telling to say no more. Throw in the white towel. Hell, Gavin Newsom could be worse. That's not the point. The point is you can't be led by this incapability. You can't be led by this weakness. You cannot, as a party or a nation, be led by Joe Biden.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Story number two. The blowback. To me saying, it's selfish not to have children. A recent study showed that birth rates in the United States of America over the past 20 years have dropped by 20%. That is staggering. Birth rates dropping in America, running the risk of our future looking not unlike that of Europe, of Italy, or of Japan, where stagnation is the story. People in Japan declining to get married, declining to have children, living isolated. Plugged in virtual lives, workaholics. What does that look like for America? Not good. When I was hosting Fox News primetime at 8 p.m. some week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago, I did this story on birth rates dropping in America. I think it's pretty significant. I think it's one of those stories that the media doesn't look at and give enough attention that actually is one of the big stories that matters to our future. And I said, almost in passing, in talking to a guest, that one of the ways that we could begin to address this problem is simply as individuals not prioritizing selfishness, to do something selfless, like start families and have children. That earned me some blowback in the digital media lefty media sphere. For example, the Young Turks, a digital media enterprise, took me to task on that statement. Fox News host says it's selfish not to have children. They went then, in their minds, I guess, rebutting that proposition, but instead, in my mind, laying out exactly the reason I would make such a statement. Now, first of all, let's talk about the statement that I did not make. I didn't say if you're childless, you're selfish. There are many reasons that people do not have children. Get married late in life. Incapable. Try. Use modern technology. It's not possible. Maybe just the circumstances of life for one individual or one couple make it such that it's not in the cards for you to have children. What I offer you today is not judgment on every single individual's path in life, but as a society, this trend toward childlessness is, I believe, in fact, a reflection of a growth in selfishness. It's not a reflection of a growth in capability. There have always been people incapable of having children. It's not a reflection of individual circumstances where it just wasn't in the cards. That's always been the case for individuals within society. But what we're talking about now, a trend that's resulted in birth rates dropping 20%, is in my mind, at the very least, a correlation, if not a causation, on the rise in selfishness. Here's what I mean. Those that thought they were offering a rebuttal started talking about the reasons you would choose not to have children. They talked about, first of all, affordability. I get it. It's hard. The economy is scary. It's difficult. Come out of college with debt. Don't find jobs that even can pay off that debt. A future with AI. How do I even make a living? It's scary to have children when it comes to affordability. I've also heard the argument made about climate. How in a world with such apocalyptic visions of the future when it comes to climate, could you bring in a child? I've seen the argument made, oh, with the way this country is headed with, you know, gun laws, people said, with school shootings, you know, why would you bring into this world a child? And what I would say to all of those arguments is, if you think those are reasons not to have kids, you are, yes, selfish. Here's why. First of all, I know it's hard. Every single one of us, especially men, say to themselves, I gotta wait, I gotta make a little more money, I just need a few more years. It's almost always wrong. I promise you, as someone who even entertained those thoughts and might have even put it off longer than I should have, it was wrong. People have been having children for eternity in much, much poorer circumstances than those that we can imagine today. And they did all right. They raised families, they raised productive children. Money is not, no matter how much we delude ourselves, a reason not to start a family. It's simply not. You bet on the come. That's the facts. You bet on the future. And there's no better bet on the future than children. Children are the ultimate vision of optimism, that tomorrow will be better, that tomorrow will be okay, that these contributions, meaning these human beings that I will raise, will actually help make this better tomorrow. And you're going to figure it out. Financially, you're going to figure it out. Kids don't need to be rich. They simply don't. Families don't need to be rich to be happy, to actually be wealthy in the things that matter in life. If affordability is what is delaying or denying the creation of a family, it is selfish in the way of being lost in your own thoughts, lost in your own plot, as is this ridiculous notion of climate change. That is nothing more than narcissism. Oh, I know that you think you're thinking of everything outside of yourself, the world, the planet. No, you're not. You're thinking of yourself and your own apocalyptic ideology. That's it. If you don't have children because you believe the oceans are rising, you're simply thinking and talking to yourself. Guns, same thing. Grow up. Learn the statistics. School shootings are something no one abides. No one wants to continue. That doesn't mean we're going to support your perceived solutions. But it also is neither statistically or reality-based in any way to think, well, that's a reason not to have kids. You're once again caught up in your own politics. Selfishness. I do believe the pursuit of wealth, the pursuit of leisure, the pursuit of the perfect life, the pursuit of the perfect vacation, the pursuit of the perfect spouse, all of these things about the self are what's contributing to the decline in birth rates. You think I look at Japan, you think, by the way, birth rates are declining in Japan. I don't think they have a big school shooting problem. What's happening? People focused on themselves, their jobs, their ambitions, their concerns, their fears, whatever it may be. Life is richer. I feel like I can confidently, life is richer. Life is fuller. Life is more optimistic. Life is way more less selfish, way more selfless when you surround it with life, with children. I stand by that statement. I don't care how much blowback there is. It is selfless to continue to contribute life, ideas, more people, more ideas. You want to know an anti-human idea, a selfish anti-human idea? The idea that the world is overpopulated. There's too many of us. I assume when you say too many of us, you mean not you. Selfish. If there needs to be a culling, I assume you mean not you. This apocalyptic vision of the future, this selfish need for our own material wealth and well-being. This is what's driving the denial of, honestly, a richer, fuller life that's better for everyone. You want a better tomorrow? Have more kids for you and for society. I stand by that. The decline in birth rates definitely tied to selfishness.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. Stories of strength and weakness in baseball as we begin Pride. Baseball, Major League Baseball, seems to be overtaken with controversy. They're at the center of the crossroads here when it comes to tolerance and intolerance, when it comes to Pride Month. First, Toronto Blue Jays pitcher Anthony Bass shared a story on his Instagram account from somebody else's words, wherein they talked about whether or not it's appropriate to be boycotting Bud Light and Target and how to reconcile that with your Christian faith. To that, quickly, Anthony Bass was pressured, brought to the microphones to grovel, bend the knee, and beg for forgiveness. He issued a standard boilerplate. I'm learning with the resources of the Toronto Blue Jays how to be a better person. Everyone is welcome to the ballpark. He bowed before the rainbow flag. In opposite of that, Dodgers pitchers, both Clayton Kershaw, and I'm forgetting the name of the other Dodgers pitcher, stood very strong. The other Dodgers player put together one of the most amazing statements about not agreeing with the Dodgers' choice for the to invite. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are this group that mocks Christian faith, Catholicism in particular, nuns, priests, openly mocks them. Somehow, this mockery is fallen under the banner of pride, has fallen under the banner of the ever-expanding alphabet. LGBTQI 2+, T2S plus, whatever. Somehow, mockery of Christianity has become part of that tolerance, which does bring me to this. That's where we are today. Where we are today is very different than where we were yesterday. Almost yesterday, we were having a debate in society about the acceptance of gay marriage. Today, a short spin of the time wheel later, we are having a debate about whether or not to invite in to the umbrella of tolerance child genital mutilation, hormone blocking therapy, sex education, including graphic illustrations of various forms of sex in books, not just marketed, but distributed through the school system to middle schoolers, to now what is required is, under the name of tolerance, accept the mockery of the Christian faith. Where will we be tomorrow? What else will fall under this banner? Minor attracted persons, MAPS, that's a thing, an acronym that sort of anesthetizes the concept of pedophilia. What else? What is next? In this push for the next civil rights cause for tolerance, there's a need to always be out on the frontier. The next thing. That's clearly something we have seen as we've gone from LG to B to T to Q to IA, on and on. The addition is the pushing of the frontiers of acceptance, of tolerance. And if you find at any point in that push that the push has gone too far, you're met with the cry of bigotry. It's bigoted to not put sexually explicit materials in front of children. It's bigoted to suggest children should not have gender-affirming care. Let me translate that. Genital mutilation. It's bigoted to suggest men should not participate in women's sports. That's the column in USA Today by Nancy Armour in response to ESPN's Sam Ponder. ESPN's Sam Ponder has stood up and said enough. Nancy Armour writing just one of the most ridiculous columns you'll ever find, said that Sam Ponder and Sage Steele and others are doing nothing more than indulging good old-fashioned bigotry. Ponder responded to that biology is not bigotry. But where does this go next? What is the next thing that must be honored by the Dodgers? The Dodgers initially said no to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. With that, they got a huge backlash from the Pride community, and now they've been re-included. So players like Clayton Kershaw have said, this does not fit with my faith. Trevor Williams of the Washington Nationals, this does not fit with my faith. Anthony Bass said what he had to say. But different than Anthony Bass, guys like Kershaw have not backed down, have not apologized. I wanted to find that statement by the other Dodgers player because it is one of the strongest statements you'll ever hear. It's the opposite of not backing down. His name is Blake Treinen. Here's the statement. I want to read this to you. I have it here. This is the opposite of weakness. Okay? This is the opposite of the compelled apology. Here's what Trinan had to say. He said, I am disappointed to see the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence being honored as heroes at Dodger Stadium. Many of their performances are blasphemous, and their work only displays hate and mockery of Catholics and the Christian faith. I understand that playing baseball is a privilege and not a right. My convictions in Jesus Christ will always come first. Since I have been with the Dodgers, they have been at the forefront of supporting a wide variety of groups. However, inviting the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence to perform disenfranchises a large community and promotes hate of Christians and people of faith. This single event alienates the fans and supporters of the Dodgers, Major League Baseball, and professional sports. People like baseball for its entertainment value and competition. The fans do not want propaganda or politics forced on them. The debacle with Bud Light and Target should be a warning to companies in professional sports to stay true to their brand and leave the propaganda and politics off the field. This is so strong, man. And yet, at the same time, so lacking in venom. Just strength. He goes on, I believe Jesus Christ died on the cross for my sins. I believe the word of God is true. And in Galatians 6:7, it says, do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. This group openly mocks Jesus Christ, the cornerstone of my faith, and I want to make it clear that I do not agree with nor support the decision of the Dodgers to honor the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Quote, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua 24:15. Signed, Blake Trinan. That is amazing. That is strength. And let me tell you something. For those that think strength is mocking Catholicism or Christianity, if the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence really want to stand up against what they perceive to be intolerance, might I offer a religion that has a much more strict view of homosexuality? Might I offer you up Islam? Oh, you're not interested in Islamism. You're not interested in destroying a Quran. Oh, you're not interested in mocking Muhammad. Interesting. Interesting how your conviction and courage works. In a free society, you go after those that you think will not stand up for themselves, and you think Christians have bent the knee. Blake Trinan has showed you exactly how strength is illustrated in this society. More strength, less weakness, fewer apologies, more righteousness. If not, where will we be tomorrow? What next falls under the umbrella of tolerance and the threats of being called a bigot? If you don't embrace what comes next, what's apparently involved in that plus. By the way, the NBA Finals is tipping off. It is the Denver Nuggets against the Miami Heat. Can we just take a moment and say, man, this one's tough. I thought I would root for the Denver Nuggets. I always have to have a rooting interest. I usually pick West over East, South over North as like a rough choice of teams. Denver's the West. You know, I would usually pick Denver over Miami. Culturally, I'm more aligned, I think, although it's probably close. I really love Nikola Jokic. I love the underdog story. I love his game because my favorite thing, I have two things that I love and two qualities that I gravitate towards, vision or grittiness. Nikola Jokic just embodies vision. All-around game, unselfish, sees it, passes, rebounds, shoots, scores, does it all. But this one's going to be hard because I don't like the Miami Heat. And it's not just regional or cultural. I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan, and we don't like the Heat because, A, we were robbed of a championship in 06. Bennett Salvatore believed like Dwayne Wade was fouled every time he was breathed upon and robbed the Mavericks of their first championship in 2006. And then in 2011, when we got our chance for revenge, LeBron and D-Wade mocking Dirk, who was sick, like I am now, fake coughing into their jerseys, made everyone in Dallas hate the Heat even more. That time, we won. So not a lot of love for the Miami Heat. But, and not just because he's a Texan, a lot of love for Jimmy Butler. Because he has that other quality, grittiness. Man, he just won't be denied. Talk about underappreciated, counted out. Not just as a prospect coming out, but almost every stop. Bulls, Wolves, Sixers. Each time they decided, well, the path to success doesn't include Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler was too hard on Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. Said they were soft. Had to go with the young guys, get rid of Jimmy. I don't know how he ended up the odd man out between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid in Philadelphia. But he goes down to Miami, and with that culture, which we got to admit, as much as I don't like the Heat, they have an amazing winning culture. Jimmy Butler's turned them in from the play-in tournament this year, the play-in tournament to the NBA Finals. It's going to be really hard to root against Jimmy Butler. I think in the end, Denver is the better team. I think in the end, Jokic is most deserving of a championship. But I'd be hard-pressed to pick or root against Jimmy Butler. Enjoy the NBA Finals. That's going to do it for me today here on the Will Cain Podcast. I will see you again on Monday. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.